God is closer to us than we are to ourselves. So writes St. Augustine in his Confessions, which a group of us from this parish have been privileged to study over the past couple of months. Throughout the Easter season, we have been with the disciples as they have gradually come to that realization, as they have walked from darkness to light. When Jesus was crucified, all seemed lost and broken. Then, when he appeared in his mysterious risen glory, it was a step-by-step process of belief and of conversion that enabled them to become a new community of hope. And you know, it happened really against all odds. Now, as we get closer to the day of Pentecost, when his Spirit is breathed upon them, we are reminded about the fundamental character of God. St. John, in his epistle, says, God is love. Well, yes, it sounds all so very obvious and maybe even very simple. We all know that God is love. We are to love, and so on. But we also know that the love of God, the agape love, the love that seeks the good of the other at all times and in all places, well, that love is not so easy for us. We may have heard the call to Christian love a million times, but the truth is there is a gulf between knowing it and living it day by day. Familiar as these lines may be, they need not just to be heard, they need to be practiced over and over again. Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. That is an extraordinary statement when you stop and think about it. It suggests that even those who may not profess any kind of faith, that when they show love, they show and they experience something of the divine life. Perhaps the most important of all is the insistence that God takes the initiative in showing love towards us, we who are so very far from having earned or deserved it. In this is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us. If we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is perfected in us. How is this the case? Well, of course, because it has been embodied and perfected in Jesus Christ, the Son of God. God abides in those who confess that Jesus is the Son of God, and they abide in God. Love has been perfected among us in this. But we are still very much a work in progress, and John, the writer of this letter, knows that all too well, probably from his own life experience. He just doesn't let us get too confident. Those who say, I love God, and hate their brothers or sisters, well, they are liars. In other words, we cannot love God if we do not work hard at loving each other. But we must love God first as our guiding principle. In today's gospel, we are listening to Jesus as the evangelist remembers his voice in the upper room many years before. I am the vine, and my Father is the vine grower. Here is another image for us as we think through our life as Christians. Jesus is the vine. We are the branches. But then there are those words which we may want to overlook. God, the vine grower, removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Well, if this is true of Jesus, how much more is it true of us? The Christian life takes work. One important part of faith's journey is being open to God's working in us, which does mean clipping and pruning so that we can grow into our vocation of discipleship. That is so much more than individual piety or preference. It is living together in a community that bears each other's burdens, that rejoices with those who rejoice, and weeps with those who weep. Now to the first reading from the book of Acts. Here I think we have one of the most marvelous stories of conversion, the most marvelous stories of discipleship. Now there was an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of the Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, in charge of her entire treasury. He had come to Jerusalem to worship and was returning home. Seated in his chariot, he was reading the prophet Isaiah. A man has traveled all the way from Ethiopia to Palestine. It was a dangerous and long journey through the desert and along the seacoast. The man has been given special dispensation for this trip by his queen. Candace is known not to have been necessarily a personal name, but a dynastic title for the queen mother who performed certain rituals on behalf of the king. So the man is actually a senior court official. His status as a eunuch sets him apart for life in the royal household. So he's not just there to polish the silver. He is in charge of the queen's personal treasury, a trusted, loyal servant. She obviously knows this journey to Jerusalem is important for him. And why does he go? Well, Luke tells us he goes to worship. He has probably gone to one of the major festivals, and this raises the question of his identity. He could, in fact, be Jewish, either by birth or by conversion, one of the many who were dispersed in the first century, which went right into Africa by the time Acts was written. In this case, maybe he is reclaiming the faith of his birth or discovering the faith of his conversion. But maybe it's all brand new to him. Others have told him about that great temple in Jerusalem, and it is possible that he is drawn there out of sheer curiosity. Whatever the reason, it is his desire, his willingness, his openness to go on a journey, to seek a deeper truth, that stands out. Seated in his chariot, he is on his way home. He stops to read the scroll from Isaiah. What was he thinking? Who is this sheep led to the slaughter? Who is this lamb standing mute before its shearers? And then there is Philip on a journey of his own, called by the Spirit to go to the man, presumably to help him understand. Sometimes in life, we meet people who have come along just at the right time, as if God put them there for us. Of course, it's up to us to be open, to be aware, to let them near to us. Philip hears the word and goes alongside the chariot. The Ethiopian invites him in. And with that, the apostle is able to show him Jesus. So powerful is this encounter that the man from Ethiopia says, "I want to be part of this new flock. I want to be baptized." So at his command, the chariot stops. They get out, and wade into the water together. Then the Spirit snatches Philip away, summoning him to another place for another encounter. And the eunuch continues his journey home, rejoicing in his new life. God nearer to him than he is to himself. You see, his conversion happens when Philip opens the scriptures, showing him Jesus, showing him the way of love. Then in the water, the man allows himself to die for a moment in the arms of his companion. He splashes his way back to the beach with a new identity, reborn into the life of the risen Lord, touched by a truth and a love that is greater than anything he has ever known. Christian tradition maintains that this official of the queen is responsible for bringing the faith to the Ethiopian people. Like Philip, he is an evangelist, a sharer of the good news that has touched him. Well, let's put ourselves into this story just for a moment. And when we do, perhaps we find that there is something of us in this foreign traveler. You and I are on a journey, one in which we sometimes find ourselves aliens in a strange land. Yet we are invited by God to know him, to grow in him, to learn and to know his love, to grow in Christ, to be branches that bear fruit because we are grafted onto his vine. God is nearer to us than we are to ourselves, which is to say that God is always present. It is us who need to make ourselves present and vulnerable to him. We come to our true selves when we come to God, when we know his agape, self-giving love, and when we, by his grace, seek it in and for others. Our baptismal life leads us from darkness into light. This is a journey, like the journey of Philip, like the journey of this Ethiopian and of St. Augustine and all the greats who have gone before us. A journey of rebirth, of knowing ourselves grafted like a branch, like a vine, onto Christ's very life, coming to ourselves by first coming to love God. I give the last words to St. Augustine. He writes, "My love for you, Lord, is not an uncertain feeling, but a matter of conscious certainty. But when I love you, what do I love? It is not physical beauty, nor temporal glory, nor the brightness of light dear to earthly eyes, nor the sweet melodies of all kinds of songs, nor the gentle odor of flowers and ointments and perfumes, nor manna or honey, nor limbs welcoming the embraces of the flesh. It is not these I love when I love my God. Yet there is a light I love, and a food, and a kind of embrace of my inner man, where my soul is floodlit by light, which space cannot contain, where there is sound that time cannot seize, where there is a perfume which no breezes disperse, where there is a taste for food no amount of eating can lessen, and where there is a bond of union that no satiety can part. That is what I love when I love my God." Beloved, let us love God.